My first guest of the last hour is Rabbi Elchanan Pupko. He's a writer, an educator, an 11th generation rabbi. I don't know too many people who can make that claim. And we're going to be talking about the identity of Jews in America in a post-October the 7th world. Rabbi Pupko, thanks for talking to me on Chai FM this afternoon.
Thank you for having me.
Rabbi, so October the 7th shook all of us, wherever we were in the world, to our very cause. And I'm wondering to what extent you perceive a change in the way American Jews relate to their Jewish identity following October the 7th.
Yes, yeah, so it transformed Jewish identity. And I would say there's three groups of American Jews. You have one group that is the, mentioned often by Jewish outreach organizations, synagogues. That's the group of Jews who are now going to synagogue more. They're identifying more with local federations, Hillel organizations. So it's the people who became much more Jewish. You most prominent, I guess, is Michael Rapaport, the actor, who is now posting every day his tefillin he's putting on. So you have that group. Then on the other hand, you have the group that has become radicalized to anti-Zionism, where they look around, they see the numbers, and they say, okay, if everyone's hating Israel so much, if you can't beat them, then join them. And that's what we saw this week. I don't know if anyone there follows, but in the Emmys Awards, where a Jewish actress, Hannah Einbinder, spoke out very strongly against Israel. And that's another group. And then in the middle, you have, unfortunately, the ADL came out with a report today, many Jews who just hide. They go into hiding. 80% of Jewish students around the world hide their Jewish identity. So that's, I would say, in some ways, the saddest part. It's the Jews who sort of disappear for us.
Rabbi, that's a frightening statistic. 80% of Jews, you're telling me, are hiding their Jewish identity.
80% of Jewish students. So students in universities on campus. This is a report out today from the Anti-Defamation League. You can, they just published it today, and it's heartbreaking. 80% of Jewish students, and this is not just the United States, this is around the world, are just simply hiding. And like I said, in some ways, it's more tragic than the anti-Zionist Jews who, have their own problems. This is Jews who just simply, disappear for us, and it's heartbreaking.
You spoke about Jews becoming more Jewish. You spoke about Jews becoming anti-Zionist or even anti-Jewish. I'm not sure what exactly that group comprises of. And then the hidden Jews. I'm interested in how that translates into that demographic from, say, 15 to 21, the demographic that's going to bode to tell us about the future of the Jewish community in the United States. How do those three categories split amongst that demographic?
Yeah, so you have to, first of all, you can't judge them because a lot of this corresponds to what's going on in the general society. So if you're a Jew over the age of 60, you're very proud of your Judaism. You remember, maybe you remember the Six-Day War. Maybe you remember the early days of the State of Israel. There's a lot that you're proud of, and you grew up in a world that was very philo-Semitic, very, Jews were welcome everywhere. The young Jews are growing up in a very hostile environment. In the United States, 62% of young people, ages 18 to 25, are pro-Hamas over Israel. They'll choose Hamas over Israel. And so we need to understand that that's what young Jews are growing up with. So I think it's very important before we judge whether it's the anti-Zionist Jews or the Jews that are basically going into hiding, we need to understand they're growing up in a different world than us. They're growing up in a world where their classmates literally support Hamas. And it's heartbreaking. So I think that the demographics are really based on what's going on around us. Like, I don't care to say very strongly pro-Israel things. I'm not in a hostile environment, but they're going to school with these anti-Semites, and it's much more difficult.
Do you think that American Jewry lost its way somewhere along the road, in that do you think the less religious portions of the community, and I'm one of them, I must say, do you think that Tikkun Olam became a religion? And do you think then if Tikkun Olam was no longer grounded in actual biblical texts, it paved the way to becoming this something else that is, to me, actually quite terrifying, that you can have young Jewish kids supporting Hamas? To me, that's just unthinkable.
So a few things. First of all, in the 1960s and 70s, I think Alan Dershowitz wrote a book along these lines. There was a very popular trend, I think Mayor Kahana liked to talk about it, of American Jews disappearing and everyone's going to assimilate. So, and it turned out to be a very wrong trend. I think before anyone eulogizes American Jewry, they should check out the history, because now, you know, with everything that was said, there are more than 7 million American Jews, and they're succeeding in many ways. And so, yes, on the one hand, there's people who say, okay, this is the end of American Jewry, but historically speaking, American Jewry is much more resilient than people think. At the same time, the educational system definitely has to be inspected. I mean, the fact that so many of the prominent anti-Zionist Jews are very often the more educated ones. You won't see so many Jews who have no Jewish background, but they're very active in the pro-Hamas movement. You will see people who went to, you know, a Jewish summer camp. They learned, like you said, about Tikkun Olam, and then they became so militant in their anti-Zionism. So it's definitely those educators and those rabbis and those teachers definitely need to look hard at what a generation they brought up and what, you know, how not to repeat that.
It becomes very real, Rabbi, because next week we're all going to be sitting around the Rosh Hashanah table, and there's going to be three generations of Jews at many of those tables. And I'm just wondering, what do we do with those youngsters who just don't speak the same language that we do anymore? How do you have a common conversation? Do you deal with the issue head on and discuss it, or you just pretend there's an elephant in the room and avoid it?
It's interesting. I looked to shift a bit. I looked at the story of Tyler Robinson, who was the alleged assassin of Charlie Kirk, and it's heartbreaking, right? You see, he was raised in Utah, which is a very religious state, by very religious parents, and you see what happened. I think parents need to realize their children are spending too much time online. Parents need to realize what an influence that is having on their kids. And I think we just need a better understanding of the environments these kids are in. It's not an easy thing, but yeah, parents need to realize that, you know, you think, oh, the kids are just a few hours on Instagram. That can completely change your child. It's important to be aware of how children are being radicalized online.
And you know what's incredible to me as an outsider looking in? You know, you look at Zoran Mamdani, who in all likelihood is going to be the next mayor of the most Jewish city outside of Tel Aviv in the world. And a large proportion of his supporters are Jewish. I just don't understand this, how American Jews became so incredibly liberal at the cost of their identities. I don't understand that. So I suppose my question to you is...
So it's a bit of a cause and effect, though, right?
Question? No, go on. I'm more interested in hearing what you have to say.
It's a bit of a cause and effect. I don't think it's that American Jews woke up one morning and said, oh, let's support Zoran Mamdani. It's Jews who spend all their time among in progressive circles, online with progressive causes. They look around, they see everyone else is doing it. And, you know, it's the worst and oldest excuse children give you. It's everyone else was doing it. I think a lot of the Jews that are supporting Mamdani, a lot of anti-Zionist Jews, those are the environments they live in. I don't think they woke up and said, okay, let's, you know, do all this stuff. I think they're in a hostile environment. And so obviously it doesn't excuse it. Yeah.
Rabbi Pupka, I'm just thinking that if you excluded the Israel issue from Mamdani's rhetoric, probably what he says resonates to a lot of New York liberal type Jews. He wants Tikkun Olam. He wants free groceries for the poor. He wants free transport. I mean, they're actually very Jewish values. Israel, unfortunately, appears to have become the wedge issue.
Yeah. So, look, it's a lot of it is the socialism and it's important to remember that in our history, we've had, unfortunately, many young Jews 100 years ago drawn to socialism, to communism. They do appeal to a sentiment that, you know, is misleading. And people are like, okay, yeah, of course, who wouldn't want to be a nice person? Let's give everyone everything for free. So it does take advantage of people with a kind heart, American Jews, by the way, are number one in terms of charitable giving. So it does appeal to the charitable nature of us as a Jewish people. But obviously, we've seen the cost of socialism. We've seen the cost of communism. So it does appeal to our young people. But at the same time, it's a danger. You know, they used to say that about communism, that if you didn't think it's a good idea under the age of 20, you don't have a heart. And
that's right.
If you're above 20 and you think it's right, you probably need to think better.
Rabbi, thank you for ending it on that note. It's been a pleasure talking to you. Thank you for your time this afternoon.